Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Good afternoon. It's just coming up to 5 past 5. You are listening to Women Talk. With me in the studio today, Beverly Stone-Hewer, Debbie Bennett and Rachel Garrett. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Thank you all for coming. You listening at home, if you would like to get involved, you're more than welcome. Here's how.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95.
Okay, so this first article is talking about alcohol. I thought, you know, we'd start with a subject that, you know, we may have some experience on. This is talking about spirits that have less alcohol in them. So spirits that you normally have 40%, aren't they? The gin, vodka, whiskey, all that kind of thing, normally 40%. So this article is talking about the same alcoholic drinks, but with less alcohol, either half the amount or even less than that some of the time, and asking whether the taste is just as good. What do we think? Have we tried any alcohol that is spirits like this that have a less lesser alcohol content?
I've tried alcohol-free gin, and I quite like it on a particular time when I'm driving, of course, but it wouldn't be my drink of choice.
Mm. It's a good substitute, isn't it?
That's
the perfect
bad.
Time when you're when you're driving, so
Absolutely.
You feel like you're kind of still kind of having a drink and joining in with everyone else.
Exactly. But, it doesn't taste the same, it just looks the same. So you have to get used to the fact that it has got a different taste, but you do feel like you're having a grown-up drink still. So for things like that, I quite like it. And I like the idea that you can get lower
alcohol
drinks as well, but it wouldn't, again, it wouldn't be my drink of choice.
That
unless
would be a reason for having it.
Absolutely,
as opposed,
absolutely.
I think I'd go for it as a drink of choice.
Yeah,
just because, especially, you know, out here, it's just so easy to have so many drinks. So actually, if you're having a third of the alcohol, you could still have all the drinks that you want without the raging hangover the next day.
Well, yeah, exactly. There's a we can say brands, I think. There's a Tanqueray that does, is it Tanqueray?
The Tanqueray does zero.
Then there's a
Gordon's.
Beefeater that does 50%.
Oh, yeah.
As in 50% of the normal cont. So 20% alcohol as opposed to 40% alcohol.
You should try that.
And I can't really notice the difference, to be honest. And it's half the alcohol content.
It's fantastic. I mean, that's what the article's saying. A lot of the drinks are just, I mean, 5 out of 5 that for the taste test, a lot of them got.
Yeah, definitely. And you can have the amount of choice that you can get on tonic waters now is incredible, isn't it? If you're if you're drinking at home, so you're buying tonic waters from a supermarket, the amount of colours and flavours you can get from a tonic water, so you can have a normal gin or vodka or whatever, and you can have a tonic water that has elderflower or strawberry or lime, or which is amazing.
I think it is a lovely idea, but personally, don't bring them to my house.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Have you tried one of these before?
No, I wouldn't dream of it,
Hannah.
But I have to say, talking of everything alcohol-free, Jamie has discovered 0.0 Guinness. And he said it's a game changer. It's fantastic.
Yeah, PJ
and
had it the other
day. We had it. We could get it in, if I can say, the big supermarket in Estepona.
Yeah.
But since he cleared the shelves out, they've not restocked. And he actually bought some online.
Wow.
And this enormous case was delivered the other day.
The
issue was, though, it's only got a 2-month expiry date, so he's going to have to drink it
Knock him back. Oh, that's good. Yeah, there are some really nice, because traditionally for years, zero beer particularly isn't kind of that great, but there are some brands that have really perfected it over time.
Yeah, I've got one that
really
I like
nice
at home.
Ones.
I'd have it in preference now.
Really?
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
What is it?
Mahu Tostada.
Okay.
It's delicious. Delicious.
Nice. I like the Heineken. Heineken Zero is actually a good one as well.
But I don't think they've actually perfected the wine, though.
No.
Each
they
time,
really
I remember going
no.
to dinner parties and you're driving and you take a bottle of, you know, the normal wine and you take some alcohol free, and it was just, why you know, just drink lemonade.
Yeah, or even grape juice.
Yeah.
Because grape juice is actually quite nice, but zero alcohol wine tastes like grape juice with like a load of vinegar chucked in. I mean, it's really not nice.
No, they need kombucha. Anyone's listening, work on the wine.
Yeah, definitely.
I like kombucha. That's a good alternative to wine.
Yeah, I need to try that again. Oh, I feel like I've only tried it once. But isn't it kind of got a, like a sort of tea flavour to it? I feel like, or am I thinking
it depends
else?
On, I mean, there's like you know, like tonics, there's loads of different flavours. I like the ginger and lemon one. It's fermented.
Right, so it's fermented. An acquired taste.
But yeah, it's slightly sort of zingy. Yeah. I like it. I think it's nice.
I need to try it again. I feel like I had it once years ago and haven't gone there since.
Right,
it
might be different now.
Yeah, okay. Kombucha, I'll try it. This is an interesting one. Talking about prisons, I had a guy on yesterday or the day before talking about prisons. His book was all about the idea. He wasn't suggesting it should happen. He was just looking into the idea of prisons being abolished. He was a scholar from America, and he said there are far too many people in prison in America, particularly. And we had a really interesting discussion about prison and what kind of possible alternatives there would be. And he said a lot of the time in America, the prisons are absolutely horrendous, and the prisoners are treated like dirt, you know, given kind of food on the floor, and the conditions are disgusting, quite frankly. Well, and I feel like that the impression that we kind of get in the UK, rightly or wrongly, is that prisons seem to be, you know, they have a television, you know, they get nice food, and we kind of sometimes see it in a slightly better way, certainly than it comes across in the States. And this article is all about that. It's talking about a particular prison called HMP Oakwood, which is in Staffordshire. It says inmates at the 2100 capacity jail have the chance to order up to £50 worth of food each fortnight, with the rest of the menu offering produce such as a rack of lamb, pork belly, smoked salmon and shrimp. The goods are ordered in raw from a list of approved suppliers for the enhanced status inmates, those afforded extra privileges for good behaviour. They cook for themselves on their own wing, which is equipped with a kitchenette. So the article's talking about the fact that low-paid workers are forced to use food banks. You know, there's been a lot about that in the press with the various NHS workers. And here we have prisoners allowed to eat chops, steaks and smoked salmon. What do we think about that?
Insanity.
It does sound a bit madness, doesn't it, really?
Peter Andre would definitely have something to say.
What would he say?
Insania.
This is insania.
It was like he walked in the room, wasn't it?
Peter, this is women talk.
Get out. I think we don't know enough about the story. It sounds, if it was just a question of really, people on the best behaviour are given more money and they can order all this food, it sounds a bit weird. However, there might just be a bit more to it than that. It could be that they're trying to rehabilitate people back to the world, getting them to try and budget with their money. It may be an exercise they're doing. I don't know enough about it,
really. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, okay. Because it might be, if you're going to go back into the workplace, this is your budget. You need to work out how much you need for your food, how you're going to cook it, etc., etc. So I don't know enough about it, really.
Yeah, that makes sense when you describe it like that.
I'm not sure. When I read it, it didn't sound like that. But because if it was, then they wouldn't have been choosing the food and giving them these food options. I mean, if it's your budget, you choose your food. But maybe. But the reality is, it's an incentive program, isn't it? And that's what prisons need, incentive programs.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you have chaos in prisons. So if you don't incentivise the prisoners to behave well, you don't have them behaving well.
Yeah.
And that's why life term, everybody thinks life should be for life. But actually, where is the incentive for that prisoner to behave if he knows that there's never, ever, ever going to be a chance? You know, I know the really extreme ones do, but that's the whole point. It's all about incentivising. And then the cooking sounds to me quite sensible, because actually they're so institutionalised that when they come out, they can't do anything, can't look after themselves. So from that perspective, it is a form of rehabilitation.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can make the comparison between people outside prison struggling and a little bit of money being spent on food in prisons. When you think about the absolute abhorrent cost of prisons and the reality that they don't work anyway. Don't stop people reoffending.
Yeah, it's not comparing like for life, is it? No, I think it. I mean, I don't like the idea that people are struggling and going to food banks and et cetera, et cetera. But that's an extreme. Mm. The way they're positioning it is a real extreme.
Yeah. It's written in that line, I think, as well, isn't it? The fact. Yeah. I mean, I probably wouldn't have thought about it unless the food bank thing could even had actually been mentioned.
Exactly.
In that article.
Yeah. We've had a message from Teresa. Giles had a guest this week who wrote a book about life in prison and asked the question: is prison about retribution or punishment?
Well, exactly. It's supposed to be about retribution, isn't it? It's not supposed to be. Sorry, it's supposed to be about. It's supposed to be a way of punishing the person, but it's not supposed to be vengeance.
Yeah, it's a real one of the things I was discussing with the guy the other day, talking about the idea of when people are in prison. Yes, it's punishment, but if you can, as you were saying, Debbie, you know, get them used to the real way. We're talking about people who are in prison for a long period of time. And he was saying how often people can be targets when they come out of prison. You know, if anybody knows who they are, if it's been a high profile case, if it's a celebrity, you know, if it's someone who's done some pretty serious crimes, I think most people, rightly or wrongly, would feel very uncomfortable in their company. You know, if you've seen them on the news, you've seen the horrendous things they've done, even if they've been in prison for 40 years. If they come out and, you know, they may well have good behaviour, all that kind of thing, how would you feel if they moved in next door? You know, it's a really, really tricky one. You'd think, OK, they've done their time, but would you still be happy to hang out with them?
Well, it depends on the crime, doesn't it?
I mean, of course, it could be serious crimes.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, if it was someone who went into prison for non-payment of council tax, I think I'd be all right. A drink driver, you know, someone who maybe had an accident and injured someone from drink driving. Have they paid their, you know, have they done their time because they've learned it was maybe a silly thing, but it affected so much. I don't know. It depends
on the circumstances. It's a really interesting subject, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because you'd like to think that you wouldn't want to judge and be accepting, but in reality it would be a very strange thing. You know, if someone I don't know, if there was a party and someone said, oh, this is my friend such and such, he's just been in prison for doing this, you'd be like, oh, okay, great. And you know, I'm sure a lot of people will have met people who have been in prison, but I'm sure most people would think, what were they in prison for? You'd be interested, wouldn't you?
But then there'd be other communities where, so if you haven't been in prison, you'd be the odd one out.
So
then you're going to pretend you have.
Just to fit in, exactly.
And then Peter Andre would come along.
Exactly.
This is insane.
Just like that. Right, we'll take a break.
TRE. On TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Women Talk with me in the studio today, Beverly Stone-Hewer, Debbie Bennett and Rachel Garrett. Had a couple of messages in. Thank you for your messages. There's got to be situations where the incarceration of a proven violent criminal cannot be the chief concern, because the safety of those living in the community must be protected, right? Yeah. Absolutely. I'd agree with that. And then another message from Teresa saying an ex-convict or most politicians. Now, there's a choice. Think I'd pick the convict. Brilliant. So moving on to M&M's. There's a link. M&M's is dropping its controversial woke makeover for the colourful characters which plug the chocolate treats. The company is placing an indefinite pause on the mascots after changing them last year to be more inclusive. At the time, Mars, which makes M&M's, said the makeover for the six animated characters, dubbed Spokes Candies, would emphasise their nuanced personalities. The green M&M was stripped of her sexy high heels and made to wear trainers. She and another female mascot apparently became lesbians. What? While the orange M&M embraced an anxiety disorder. What?
Please.
This is madness.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
I
mean,
I think Peter Andre's back.
Coming in. I can't help it.
These aren't people.
They are chocolates.
They're chocolates. The world's gone mad.
It is crazy. I mean, it's really just
stupid, isn't it?
Lesbians and anxiety disorder. I don't get it. Like,
I know.
I understand, like, we all want to feel, everybody should feel included, but we're talking about M&M's. I mean, I've seen M&M's mascots in airports and things like that. I haven't even noticed what shoes they're wearing.
No.
I mean, whether they're in heels or Wellington boots or trainers, I mean, would people really go, oh, why are they? I mean, really? Would people really get offended what shoes they're wearing?
I'm interested now, though.
You want the orange one,
just a big marketing ploy.
Yeah.
A marketing ploy, yeah, probably is, actually.
Yeah.
Amazing. It's crazy, isn't it?
I mean, how can... For a teddy, how can you even... I don't necessarily want you to
teddy.
Ask...
Yeah.
I don't necessarily want you to answer this question because it's not really a question, but how would you make one of these M&M's characters into a lesbian? Why? And do you know what I mean? I mean...
There's an advert when they're in bed.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, then it starts getting a bit kinky, doesn't it?
Yes.
How much do you do?
But they don't have breasts or genitals, do they? They're just...
We don't know.
So in order to show that they're lesbian, surely they both have to wear the heels in order for you to know their gender. Yeah. Otherwise you wouldn't, would you?
But I just see them as an image for the chocolate. I've never stopped to think, are they female, male, or what? They're just M&M characters.
You're doing nibbling on a couple right now, though, if you've got any.
Yes, I wonder if you can tell by the taste. It's very weird, isn't it? I mean, I apologise if our flippancy is offensive, because I really don't want to be, but, I mean, I don't understand how anyone could be offended by
chocolates. No, I don't understand how anybody could be offended.
Yeah. It's very strange. I mean, is there like a TV? There isn't like a TV series, or there aren't characters, are there?
Not that I'm aware of.
The M&Ms do.
Yeah.
No, only adverts, I think.
Well, that's what they do adverts, don't they?
They can't do a series because that would be advertising Mars, surely.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so, if there was a whole TV series, then that's slightly different, and I get people needing to be represented more. But if they're just characters on adverts, I mean, there's loads of adverts with characters on. You know, do you remember that? What was the name of that dog? Oh, no, yes, no. What was
Churchill.
That?
Churchill.
Oh, it was such a great impression.
Oh, no.
I mean, did people say, oh, his voice is masculine? What about a female representative?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I mean,
I think I say give Churchill red lipstick.
That's mix it up a bit.
And pink stilettos.
No, that's me.
Brilliant.
And pull off one leg.
Brilliant.
Put them in a wheelchair.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. So, we're now talking about ageing or not. As scientists plan to be able to reverse ageing in 5 years, one of our most eminent commentators, A.N. Wilson, warns, not knowing when our time will come is a vital part of being human. That's why it's insane to seek a jab for eternal youth. He's talking about, in the article, wrinkles on a loved one's face are the signatures of a lifetime's experience. This is a really interesting subject of ageing, of trying to kind of look younger, feel younger, live longer. How do we sort of feel about that whole subject? And has your opinion changed as you've got older yourself?
I saw, I don't know where I read it, but something about a 36-year-old, and she looked gorgeous, but moaning about how much her appearance had changed and how, you know, and she was really distressed about getting old and what her face was doing. And again, it seems to be more of an internal, I think for many people, an internal issue. I must say, I had a little look, and I must say my little lotions and potions compared to when I was here last, and I said, oh, I only use a bit of aqueous cream on my face in the mornings. I've actually got a few.
Oh, you've invested.
Oh, yes. I won't go to bed without it now. Nah. Serum and everything. So I say, you know, it's an individual thing, isn't it? But thank heavens, you know, Jamie always says, oh, you don't need makeup to me, which I'm always touched by, but he doesn't seem to be saying that as frequently anymore. So, Jamie, if you're listening, you know what to do.
What about the idea of injections and pills and things like that? Not necessarily Botox. I'm not talking kind of temporary solutions. If there was some kind of pill or injection or something that you could take that would either make you look younger or make you live longer, is it something that you'd think about?
Oh dear.
So yes, I think it's yes from me.
Well, that article was sort of talking about maybe living to 120 and things like that, which, I mean, it wasn't talking about eternal life, although A.M. Wilson was suggesting you could get it, but they couldn't. Yeah. Well, they're not at the moment. But I don't know why he wrote such an odd article, I thought. It was like the actual injection or the pills they're talking about might give you an extended lifespan and also might ward off many ailments associated with older age, which has got to be a good thing.
Absolutely. And absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to reverse you. They're not suddenly going to take any wrinkles away from you.
Benjamin Button.
Yeah, exactly.
Little baby.
There you go.
The thing is, though, if you're having something like, I interviewed a scientist the other day who'd written a book all about living to the age of 300.
Yeah.
And he was saying that just, you know, when you look at kind of 50 years ago, when our life expectancy was much less and how much older it is now, you know, as decades and years go on, he was saying that there shouldn't be any reason why, obviously, the life expectancy keeps getting higher and higher. So he was talking about, you know, living to the age of 300, and he said, you know, initially it might be something that, you know, you have to pay for, so elite wealthy people would do it. And I said, If you live to the age of 300, you not only will outlive everyone you've ever met, but also children, grandchildren. That sounds really depressing to me.
Oh, gosh. I mean, can you imagine how much it would cost you to pay for your... Remember, put that fiver in a birthday card for all your relatives.
And then inflation, yeah, it'll be 5,000 before you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Jerry talks about this quite a bit because of his writing. But, he says, basically, you probably would forget. You probably would forget your first 100 years and your second 100 years, but you would reinvent yourself each time round.
Yeah.
And the reality is that at the moment we sort of live this one defined life. But even now, people are recognising that retirement isn't the same as it once was. You know, people are doing different things in retirement, getting married in their 70s now. I mean, years ago, that would have been madness.
Yeah.
So it's generational, isn't it? When you look back, I think about looking at photos of my mum and dad at similar ages and their friends, and I swear they looked really old in their 40s.
Yeah.
They seem to look, you know, so I think we are all have discovered those creams, you know, are feeling younger, looking better, perhaps hopefully living a little bit longer. Would I have an injection? If it was going to ward off evil, yes, I probably would if it was tried and tested. But I wouldn't want to live to be, at the moment, I wouldn't want to be like Groundhog Day going to bed for the next 100 years, waking up the same age. I mean, if it was like 20 years ago, yes, but...
Yeah, you reckon the boat might have been missed.
Yeah.
I find it amazing how everybody does kind of, in general, look younger, as you said, than years ago. When I was growing up, I remember my grandma, I mean, she did smoke, but I mean, I know plenty of people who smoke now and don't look like my grandma did, but my grandma was so wrinkly. Yeah. I mean, so wrinkly, but I used to think she, you know, she was a really smiley woman and her face was just all wrinkly and smiley. And I remember thinking when I was little about being... not excited, but thinking, you know, thinking I'd look the same. You know, when I'm in my mid-60s, that's how I'm going to look, you know, all wrinkly and smiley. And I don't know anyone in their mid-60s who has a wrinkly face like that. Like, it's just really strange. People just
look...
changed,
I think, it is changing.
Have.
Yeah. I don't know what it is. I mean, it's like, is
I think
it
our
less
diet
stress,
is better.
Easier at the diet.
So we're getting more nutrients and vitamins, which is good for the skin.
Yeah, we know more, don't we? We take care of ourselves mostly. Well,
probably more exercise for a lot of us.
Yeah.
Is it better, do you think, in general, where we live? Do you think if you compared people of the same age living in southern Spain or anywhere in Spain, to be honest, compared to, dare I say it, the UK or other parts of the world, do you think we're kind of aging better in Spain because of the Mediterranean diet, the sunshine, everything else, or not necessarily?
I think there's a bit of both there, can I? I think there are a lot of people here with money who perhaps are not aging gracefully but have a nice surgeon and get some assistance along the way. But I do think we generally have a better lifestyle. But saying that, the sun is damaging on your skin.
Yeah, true.
So it depends if you're a sun worshipper or not.
Yeah.
Well, I had a quick chat with my 80-year-old dad this morning. Wow. He was on the bus on one of these WhatsApp video calls. He was cross because his bus pass had just gone. He said he must have had it next to something magnetic.
Oh, no.
But he said, after a couple of minutes, the chap just said, get on. And he looked marvellous, my dad.
Amazing.
Considering he's here next month and he's taken out a year's travel insurance. So good on you, Dad.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's all about sunny dispositions as well.
Yes.
Counts for so much.
I think
Definitely. Attitude
counts. And I think on the whole, Brits or people who move to another country are probably a bit different anyway from people who stay in the same street or the same house that they always lived in. They probably got a little bit of a different outlook on life, a little bit maybe more positive, maybe more embrace new opportunities, be more challenged. Because it's a big thing to move to another country.
Actually, sometimes we just need to remind ourselves that we've all done it.
And how great that we are.
Oh, well, I say we're marvellous.
And if only Peter Andre was here.
He'd say? I do. This is insane, yeah. Woo!
Amazing. Brilliant. Okay, let's move on. This is we'll just do an ad break, actually. We'll be back.
Talk Radio Europe.
Hannah Murray. TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Women Talk with me in the studio today, Beverly Stonehewer, Debbie Bennett and Rachel Garrod. If you want to get involved, you can. Here's how.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95.
What a beautiful day. It's a wonderful life. Okay, this is an article about giving friends advice. It's saying that it could be immoral. It can be all too tempting to wade in with well-meaning advice if you don't like who your friend is marrying or if they say they're going to quit their well-paid job. But interfering in loved ones' big decisions could in fact violate a crucial moral right. This particular doctor, scientist, believes that we have a duty to allow others to make transformative choices, such as having children, moving country, changing careers, or getting married. He argues that everyone has a right to discover who they will be as a result of their choices without interference from others. So we should refrain from telling friends or family that they should not take a job, not date someone, not try skydiving, or not move abroad.
Mm. Well, he's not going to be my mate.
I don't like him.
No, exactly.
That's a bit weird though, isn't it? Because that's just life, isn't it? You go through life making choices. Some of them are good, some of them are bad, but you learn from them. So why would you say to anyone, don't do it? That's not a friend.
Yeah, I mean,
he's saying you shouldn't advise your friend
not to.
Well, let's say you thought her husband was abusive, the bloke she's going to marry is abusive, I would say to a friend, are you really sure you know what you're doing? He's really abusive.
But that's fine. I mean, because they also said about if it was a murder or whatever, or if they were going to be murdered. I think in the whole, you would just support your friend's choices, wouldn't you?
No.
You're saying you wouldn't support your friend's choices?
Not if I thought they were utterly... I would always give an opinion.
Really?
I think you know that.
Shock horror.
Rachel Garrod gives opinions.
No, but it's a really interesting point. That is a good one, particularly if your friend's going to marry someone who they've confided in you isn't a great person. How do you then get on board with it and be happy for them if you know how badly he's treated her? That is a tricky one.
Yeah, but wouldn't you just have a chat about the reminder about... You wouldn't say, don't marry this person, would you? And that's what I mean, is you wouldn't blanket say, don't marry this person. Presumably, you'd have a conversation and talk about the times, the abusive, whatever things were going on, and how you're going to cope with this. Is this the right thing to do?
But that's what the article is saying, don't interfere.
Yeah.
Leave them to get on with their own.
No,
that's what the article's
saying. I think there are some things you would just accept, but if there's a risk factor, for anyone's health or anything.
I just think the whole point of being a human being is to have opinions and to vocalise those opinions. If you don't vocalise your opinions, what are you? Just a a nothing.
You're not a Rachel, are you?
I couldn't imagine a world where people don't vocalise their opinions.
Well, I have to say, about 5 years ago, one of my dear friends announced that she'd just met a chap and he was coming to live with her, and my whole core was screaming, "Are you mad? Are you insane?"
Oh, man. Don't start.
Yeah. And I really thought, it isn't. And she actually asked my opinion, and I said, look, if this is making you happy, go with it. And you know what? They're still together 5 years later, and okay, so happy. So, you know, perhaps my input at that point, you know, what you're doing, you crazed woman, might have had a negative impact, and she may have thought it through a bit more.
Yeah.
So there you go. I think sometimes zipping it's...
But you
did say a choice as well.
If it, whatever makes you happy, which is what friendship's all about. And I also think you've got to treat people with respect, that they are intelligent enough to work their lighter.
Exactly.
I remember my dad actually trying to interfere and saying, I was leaving my job, and I hadn't got another job lined up, but I worked in recruitment, so it was, I didn't want to be lying and going out for interviews, because I'm an honest person, so I'd rather have left my job and then look for something else. Mm. And my dad went ballistic. Why would you give up your well-paid job and you haven't got anything else? And I just said, Dad, this is what I do for a living, so butt out and leave me to it. And then when I left work, 2 days later, when I got another job, I'm on the phone to him and just saying, you've got to trust me, you know. Mm. Just sometimes you've got to trust that the person's intelligent enough to work out their own life.
Yeah. He just loves you and wanted the best for you, obviously.
Yeah, I know, but it felt sort of a bit disrespectful for me because that was my job to find people work.
I think you've got a really good point there, because in a way that article is quite patronising. So it's almost implying that if you voice an opinion about something to a friend or somebody, they haven't got the strength of mind to either decide to take that or to say, no, actually, I don't agree with you. I'm going to carry on with the path that I want to do. So he's almost implying that people haven't got their own ability to. It's pros and cons.
Get it in the bin.
Advice can be a tricky one, though, because if you're asking a friend for their opinion or for their advice, you know, I'm not sure what to do about this, whether it's a job, a relationship or whatever, if you're questioning it yourself and you're saying, what do you think, then you should absolutely be prepared to get an honest answer back.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're quitting your job and taking a new job and you think, yeah, this is what I want to do, and you don't speak to your friend about it because you don't feel you need their opinion or advice, is it then inappropriate for them to say something without you asking them?
Possibly.
Yeah, because I think that's just, they're not finding out what's behind that. You know, if they're just going to judge that you're stupid because you've done something without actually understanding that there's some clear rationale for yourself in doing so. They don't know all the facts.
Yeah.
And it's, well...
Yes, it is a bit patronising, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Go.
Get it in the bin.
Okay. So, this is an article written by Julia Lawrence. She says, at 18, university wasn't for kids like me. At 55, I finally feel I belong here. And it's a really lovely article saying that when she was 18, other friends of hers went to university. She didn't feel ready. She didn't feel it was something that she wanted to do, and now at 55 she's going to university. Yes, she's an older student, but she's really enjoying it and feels like it's perfectly for her, which I thought was lovely.
Great. Lovely. Very nice. Inspiring.
Yes. Can you imagine going to university now?
No.
I'd like sort of the, you know, the student digs and that sort of side. But of course. Because I only lived at home and I always sort of saw my friends, you know, who were boarding and things. And I was like, you know, that's where I want to be, and living in communes and stuff like that. But probably just for a week as a quick insight, and then Jamie and I often at Christmas, when we're not working or anything, say, let's have some dirty student time. We just sort of in our PJs all day, you know, leaving plates. Actually, no, we don't do that. But it's sort of like a
student life, as if it's really fun and easy. And
but then you think of the young ones, don't you, with Neil and
oh yeah, man.
Yes.
It's not, maybe not so such fun. But I do like the further education. I think that's
my
a great
sister
thing.
At 64 years of age has just got a master's in psychology.
Oh, fantastic.
And before that, she did a BA in English literature. So she did the same degree that her daughter was doing, but she did hers online and her daughter was at university. So she didn't cramp the daughter's style, but it meant they could discuss the books and things like that together.
That's wonderful. Well, that's the other thing. If you go to university at an older age, you can do it online. So you don't get the student digs, but you can still, you know, have
Open
a job.
Open university is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, it's an amazing
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, really, it's brilliant.
I think it's great when you just say not just about university, but that you're never too old to learn new skills. Mm. I think it's if your body lets you.
And
you
it's know. One of the best ways of preventing Alzheimer's.
Yeah, well, there we go.
Yeah.
We don't need that injection after all, do we?
Okay, one last ad break.
TRE.radio. Hannah Murray. TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to the last part of today's Women Talk with Beverly Stonehewer, Debbie Bennett and Rachel Garrard. There's an article here about scaffolders or abusive scaffolders. Mm. This is the whole thing. If you're walking along and you've got guys on a building site who are kind of wolf whistling, "Oi, darling," that kind of stuff. Fern Cotton is talking about a time when she was walking along with her husband, incidentally, and being shouted abuse by these builders. I kind of feel like it doesn't happen so much in Spain, or it's a different kind of thing.
Or we've just got too old.
Yeah, that too.
Because I did get a wolf whistle when I first moved here and I was so chuffed. I haven't had one since.
Yes, you made me realise, I'm sure I did.
Sorry, Hannah.
My 20s.
Yeah, it's really changed, Han, hasn't it? Really changed.
Wow, isn't that depressing?
Oh, no, not at all. It's really changed.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I think you don't see, I don't go past many building sites. I'm generally in a car.
That's true.
And there's lots of new builds, but that's a long way away. I don't see, because it's not like a city per se, you don't have all that activity.
Exactly.
So I think that's when it's different.
Yeah.
I've still been walking the dog and had a few beeps, but I don't know if that was just about the dog or.
That was us saying hi, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was me, Debbie.
Yeah, Damn, I didn't have my glasses on.
But I think there's kind of a difference between, I've got to kind of describe it correctly, between, you know, wolf whistle's a wolf whistle, but guys that are kind of going, "Hey, all right, darling," kind of non-offensive, slightly flirty, chatty comment, as opposed to someone who's really creepy.
And
you feeling like, "Oh, they're looking at me really horribly." Yeah. And it's a really tricky, difficult thing to explain, especially, you know, having a conversation like this with a guy, kind of explaining what is acceptable and what's not. Because it's so often, it's not necessarily about what they've said, it's the way that they've said it, or the way that they're looking at you. So much can happen from just a look. Mm-hmm. So it's a really...
I didn't like it, actually. I remember when I was, you know, 18 or something, and some bloke go, "Oh, right, cheer up, love. It's not going to happen." You know, those kind of... Yeah. I used to feel, not like abused, but I used to think, just shut up. What is anything to do with you? Get that out of my face.
But that wasn't a wolf whistle, was it?
But even if they just go, "Oi, love, all right there, how are you doing?" I'd just say, "Oh, get lost."
Really?
Yeah.
I used to say, "All right, back to..."
I didn't, because I suppose I never really... I just felt, just get out of my face.
Yeah.
I'm doing my own thing. I mean,
no, fair enough.
Yeah, but I wasn't offended. I wouldn't say offended, just annoyed. Annoyed is the right word.
I wasn't sure in that article what these people, how they were being... what they were saying to Fern.
No, she doesn't go into detail.
But it doesn't sound like they were just doing a wolf whistle.
No.
I mean, it sounds like they were being quite offensive.
Her as well, because she's quite recognisable.
Yeah,
isn't
yeah, yeah, they yeah. Might
it says it was abusive.
Mm. Yeah.
But it's an interesting discussion, I think, because something that would annoy you...
Yeah.
another girl might quite like. And I think it's just friendly and chatty, which is why the whole idea of, I don't want to use the word abuse because that sounds like a really serious thing, but just even flirt, well, it's not really flirting, is it, when it's in this kind of situation? But do you know what I mean? It's difficult to say this is correct or this is incorrect behaviour because it's all about how it feels to the person it's being done to
absolutely.
So it's a tricky
and
one,
I think
isn't it?
You know yourself when it's crossed that line, don't you? You get a sensation, definitely.
But also people might have different lines.
That's true.
Exactly.
Mine might change from one day to another, to be honest.
That's really
time of the month.
Absolutely.
You're bad it, mate.
Keys, hand, fist. Oh, it's true. Right. The Brits, so you may remember, I can't remember when this happened, a year or two ago, when the Brit Awards decided to scrap the Best Male Artist and Best Female Artist award to kind of make it a gender neutral prize.
I wasn't aware of that
prize.
At all.
Yeah, that happened either last year or the year before.
I don't remember, no.
But now, music industry chiefs faced a backlash when they scrapped the two categories in a bid to be inclusive and relevant after non-binary musicians who identified as neither male nor female said they felt excluded. But the first gender... the first gender-neutral award was handed to Adele last year, and she famously said in her acceptance speech, "I love being a woman," kind of embracing that. But now they might bring back the best female and best male categories after not a single woman was shortlisted even for the gender neutral award. It was all men.
Interesting.
This is a really tricky one, isn't it? Thoughts?
I don't think I don't know if it's my age, but I just find it doesn't bother me. None of this bothers me. It's like if it's always been that way and it's been about women, I quite like some female singers. I like some guy singers. Mm. They generally have different tones. So I quite like a guy singer and a woman singer. I quite like the way it works now, with the best women, best guy.
Yeah, but it doesn't now.
But they're saying bringing it back. Yeah, about bringing it back.
The issue is, artists like Sam Smith springs to mind. Yeah. He doesn't identify as male or female. Mm-hmm. So therefore, if the categories are just best male and best female, I assume, could never be nominated and would never want to be nominated because he doesn't identify as male or female. That's just one example. But I think that's why they changed it. So therefore, anybody can be nominated, but it's backfired because it all ended up being men.
No women were nominated.
I really love Sam Smith.
Yeah.
Oh.
But that's just it, isn't it? The fact that you're trying to do the right thing and then the women who've been out there fighting for their rights don't get a look in.
Yeah.
The problem is you've got to go back to how are the decisions made and who's on the panel that makes the decisions and is it a gender-neutral panel? Was it just that there were no women this year that they thought were actually any good?
Well, exactly. And because if you do the other side of it, where you say, you have to put forward two men, two women, and two gender-neutral people, it could be the situation that there aren't any women that you think deserve the prize and you're putting them forward just so they're represented. It's
almost a bit like the same argument about positive discrimination. Should you actually make allowances that genders or different races or whatever don't get as much of a look in and therefore actually boost them up? So, like the business about putting women on having a quota of women on a business board because there's not many women on the business board. So they might say, right, we need 25% of the people on this committee board must be female. So that's a sort of a step of positive discrimination. Mm-hmm. So it's really whether you are a fan of that or not a fan of that. I mean, I actually am a fan of it. I think if people are hindered, whether it be by their race or their sex or whatever, then actually we should make steps to overcome that inhibition.
And so you're saying to kind of enforce representation?
Yes, I think I am, actually. I just talked myself into it. I wasn't sure at the beginning, but there you go. Thank you very much. Allowing me to think that through.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I kind of think... I feel like I think the opposite, but then as I'm thinking about it, it doesn't make sense to feel the opposite of that, because I was thinking, well, you know, you shouldn't have to put a woman there just so a woman is represented. It should be the best people.
Absolutely.
But if you've got a panel of men deciding who the best people are and they automatically pick men, then things are never going to change.
Yeah, exactly. They're never going to change. I think that's
so
it.
It's really...
Why don't they just have a female, male, and then a gender-neutral one?
So that, and then the gender-neutral could feature them all. Then they could go in twice.
Yeah, they could then be male, female, or gender-neutral.
Put that forward, Hannah. Yes. I think that's the way forward.
Yeah. One of each, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, we're saying, you know, maybe there aren't any decent female artists that they could put through. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah,
absolutely. There are plenty of gender-neutral female and male musicians out at the moment, and there will continue to be so. So there will always be people that they can put forward to represent all three.
But as long as they were doing it, as you're saying, not... What I disagree with what you're saying is just to boost the numbers. It's almost like if, as long as there were the best, and it wasn't just, oh, we've got to find someone and just shove
them
in.
That's the problem, isn't it?
It is difficult.
Of course it is. Of course,
because unless you make steps to overcome the bias that there is in these industries and whatever, like the business industry, and the music business is known to be biased towards men, in favour of men, and biased against women. So unless you make steps to overcome those biases, how do you change things?
Yeah.
But you do end up, you do run the risk of just filling in numbers.
Yeah, absolutely.
And but then we don't want to lose the joy of all this, which is music. Let's just enjoy it as well.
Yeah, definitely. That's what it's all about. Yeah. Talking of music, we're going to end the show. Peter Andre has kindly joined us.
Hi, Peter.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
It's great for you to join
thanks
us.
Thanks for coming.
He got a mention last time I was here as well.
Yeah, maybe it's you, Bev. I think you're the common link. Oh, I don't want to mention that.
No, we're not mentioning that.
His appendage, as referred to in Rebecca Vardy.
Oh, not very big, was it?
Well, no, bless him. He wasn't very happy with it coming out again because he had to.
Surprised.
Coming out again.
Peter, could you put it away? He's such a nice guy as well.
Such a nice guy.
Yes.
Oh, if only you could sing to us.
I know. Do you, Peter, will you?
Will you?
I think he might if we're nice. What do we want him to sing? What song could it possibly be?
Well, you know what my favourite is, Hannah.
What is
What's
it?
What's that?
This is insane.
Well, funnily enough, I think that's... Have you got the guitar, Peter? Oh, yeah. Do you play the guitar? Any guitars in this song? I have no idea. Okay, we're going to end with Peter Andre and Insania. He said he'll do it. Ladies, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Thanks for having fun.
Thank
See you soon.
Take a look around at what technology has found. Is it what we need, or are we killing the seed? Dictated by the screen, no more following your dreams. The world's become a difficult place to be. Where are we going? Hold on to your love. This is insane. Aging will reverse, cloning will reverse. Insanity is slowly creeping into our lives. Where is yesterday? 'Cause people ain't the same. Have we lost the faith, or have we lost our minds? Where are we going? Hold on to real life. Insania. Pray for the time when love will return. sister. Let's kill all the pain, let our hearts be the cause. No more. Where are we going?
Talk Radio Europe.
Your voice in Spain.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.